Recently, I was invited to join Phyllis Schlafly on her radio show called Eagle Forum Live. We had a lot of fun interviewing Shante Feldhahn as we discussed her newest book, The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. Today's episode contains some of the highlights of that interview. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis.
Today, Cynthia Davis joins Phyllis to co-host right here in the studio. Now, here's Phyllis.
Until recently, most adults were expected to get married and stay married. Now, people of all ages fear and distrust marriage, afraid they'll be unhappy. Today's guest wants to debunk some of these myths. Our guest is Shante Feldhahn. She received her graduate degree from Harvard. She worked on Wall Street. She's been a social researcher. She deals with all these statistics and figures that most of us don't understand. And she's got a new book called The Good News About Marriage. Thank you, Shante, for joining us. And I want you to know our co-host today, who is Cynthia Davis, a former state legislator in Missouri who's very interested in these questions. And she sold a lot of your books, so she already knows who you are.
That's very sweet.
Well, anyway... Nobody really dreams of getting a divorce someday. What are the primary factors that lead married couples to think about divorce once they get married?
Well, you know, what we've discovered in all the research that my husband and I have done over the years with, I think we're at about 13 or 14,000 men and women and about maybe seven nationally representative surveys, something like that, we actually discovered that it's not the big ticket issues that usually really kill a marriage. Usually you've got a husband and a wife who care about each other and they're trying real hard, but they don't necessarily know that they're trying hard in the wrong areas. And so, you know, classic example would be a husband who's working 70 hours a week to try to say, I love you. And his wife is feeling abandoned, right? And so these things can hurt a marriage without people ever intending to, or, you know, you could hurt your partner without ever intending to, just because you didn't know what your husband or wife most needed and what most hurts them.
Well, does your book give some helpful suggestions for how couples can cope with this?
Well, there's actually two different books that are cousin books. The first one, the big picture one, about the divorce rate, and there's so much more hope for marriage than we ever realized.
Well, I guess the first point you want to make is there really not as many divorces as we're led to believe.
Yeah, let's deal with that first, because that's kind of the big picture that sets the stage for all of this. You know, it's interesting, you know, Phyllis, for years you have been carrying the banner for marriage and for people to try to take this seriously, and all the attacks that we have had against the institution of marriage for so many decades now. And the most amazing thing that I uncovered as I started to look into what the numbers actually say is, despite all of those attacks over the years, this wonderful institution of marriage that God created, it still works. It is more resilient than what we ever realized. And it turns out that despite that kind of discouragement that we've started to have about marriage in our culture, that far more marriages are happy and long-lasting than we realized, which is what everyone wants.
Yes, it is. But I noticed there are some, and Cynthia, you may have seen these, about a lot of reports are now saying that women are unhappy. They're not as happy as they were 20, 30 years ago. And I think they maybe have false expectations about marriage. They don't realize that these are two people who've grown up in different households with some different values, and they've got to compromise on a lot of ideas. What do you think about that, Cynthia?
Well, people have become so much more selfish today than ever before.
It's all about me, 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 me. And we've made it different goals. Instead of just contentment, we do seek after material things, and we do drive both parties out into the workforce so that we can have the finer things and shop at Walmart. But talking about money, I'd like to ask you this. There's so much profit to be made in the divorce litigation industry, and I know we have some lawyers who probably listen to the show, and Phyllis herself is credentialed with a law degree, but the profitability from divorce, all the guardian ad litems, all the jobs that have been created for the social workers and everybody else who's gotten their job security from the breakdown of the home. Can you talk to me about who is pushing this divorce agenda?
You know, actually, it's really interesting that you bring that up because, yes, it has become a bit of an industry, and I think some of it becomes kind of a self-generating industry. You know, there's more money, so people go into it more, and it becomes an encouragement for people when they start having difficulties. They consult a lawyer a lot more quickly than they used to, and I don't know, you know, whether you have had any close friends ever get divorced, but I have. I've had several close friends, and it was really interesting to see what happened. The minute anybody consulted a lawyer, that was it, because the lawyers have built this, and it's understandable. They feel like they're trying to protect their clients. They've built this whole structure where, you know, once you're in that process, you really shouldn't talk directly to your husband or your wife, because that would, you know, that would hurt this process. And so you might say something wrong, and it could hurt us in court later. And so, you know what, the lawyers need to start talking to each other rather than the husbands and the wives. And what we have found so often, and many divorce lawyers have privately told me this as well, is that if the husband and the wife could just sit down and realize that the other person has goodwill towards them, that even when they've hurt them very badly, that most of the time they didn't intend to, and it became this negative spiral. If they could just sit down and believe in each other's goodwill, I had one divorce lawyer who told me he felt like 95% of his divorces would be prevented.
Well, I think one of the main problems is that many of the fights and disputes that propel divorce are over custody of the children. And unfortunately, we've let the courts and the lawyers change the meaning of a famous line, the best interest of the child. And when Blackstone wrote about this centuries ago in England, when he wrote English law, the best interest of the child was assumed to be made by the parent, because they loved the children the most. But they've changed it now, so it's judges who have to decide the best interest of the child. And that creates an essential conflict between both sides, and that's the fight goes on. What do you think about that?
I've heard those divorce statistics also, but I believe what's going on here is what you said. They know so many friends, and it skews their perception. People don't understand. Well, my best friends got divorced. Well, my goodness, it must be an epidemic. But happily, Phyllis and I have been happily married, so that gives us 100%.
Well, tell me, Shanti Feldhahn, what about this 50% rate that we hear all the time? Half the marriages end in divorce.
Yeah, it turns out that that really isn't true, and it has never been true. It's actually never been close to true.
Our guest is Shanti Feldhahn, and I'm fortunate to have with me as a guest host today Cynthia Davis, a former Missouri State legislator who's very interested in these subjects and has read lots of Shanti's books. Give us, what is the truth about the divorce rate? We are told it's 50%. Your book shows you've read all these tiresome statistical reports, and what have you come up with as the truth?
The truth is that it's nowhere close. Right now, as we're sitting here talking, according to the Census Bureau, by the way, this is not some little sideline study, according to census numbers, right now, 71% of people are still married to their first spouse.
Well, that's a wonderful statistic.
A wonderful statistic. And here's actually the cool thing. Okay, you ready for this? The 29% that aren't still married, a big chunk of that is people who were married for 50 years and their spouse died. That's not even just the divorce rate. That's marriages that have just ended. And no one knows what the first marriage divorce rate actually is. And I think that's one of the reasons the myths get started. But we can guess, we can get a lot closer. We know it has to be less than 29% because that's death and divorce. And there's about a 10% rate of widowhood. There's some other factors. We can estimate probably closer to a 20 to 25% divorce rate for first marriages. Now, that's still way too high. It's way too high. But it's a whole lot more hopeful for people when they start having problems to be able to, instead of feeling like, ugh, you know, it's inevitable, we're never going to make it, for them to know, no, wait a minute, most marriages last a lifetime. If most people can get through this, I can too.
Cynthia, you tell us from the younger generation, what is their attitude? Do they think, oh, we'll get married, and then if we don't like it, we'll get a divorce, or maybe all of our friends are getting a divorce, so let's try that too?
My brother-in-law paid $60,000 in legal fees to get a divorce, and I'm sure a lot of people thought, why would I want to incur that kind of financial obligation? I know somebody who paid $300,000 to get a divorce. So people are
most
afraid.
Of it went to the lawyers, I guess.
Oh yes, yes. The system makes everybody pay up. That's the one area where there really is no price sensitivity, and you really can't shop around that well.
Is that because the court hires the psychologists and the psychiatrists and the custody evaluators and all these people who may not know anything about raising children, but they are going to decide what happens to your children?
And all the surrounding professionals. Then when parents divorce, they spend a lot of money on the kids to try and buy favor with the children. So every industry related to indulging and spoiling children benefits. So we're looking at some societal questions. We cannot get past this if we are not more intelligent. So we love having you provide us with numbers. Can you explain to us about the church element, the component of how much you describe in your book that we actually can reduce the divorce rate even more? Because when I first heard these statistics, I was told that the church-going Christians are no better than the atheists.
Yeah, we've all heard that. Anyone, especially who's a churchgoer, has heard that the rate of divorce is the same in the church. And it's incredibly discouraging, especially for pastors, as you can imagine, you know, who feel like it means that all their work doesn't mean very much. And it turns out it's not true. It is a giant misunderstanding. Everyone thinks that George Barna found that the rate of divorce is the same in the church. And he never studied people in the church. That wasn't even what he was trying to study. He was only studying belief systems. So someone who said they were a Christian, which I would imagine is, you know, the majority of the population in the country, and someone who said they were a Muslim or an atheist, those groups had the same divorce rate. But he excluded whether they went to church from the analysis because that wasn't what he was trying to study. So what I did is I partnered with the Barna Group. And I bought that same data set, and we reran all of the numbers, but just with, you know, that one factor added of, was the person in church last week? And if the person was in church last week, the divorce rate dropped by 27%. That's actually the smallest drop. That's a big drop right there, but that's even the smallest drop that all the studies have found. I outline a few of them in the book, and the divorce rate for someone who goes to church drops anywhere from 25 to 50%. That's huge. For someone to look around church on a Sunday morning and instead of thinking, ugh, you know, half these people are getting divorced, what chance do I have? For them to realize, wait a minute, it's not only is it not half to begin with, but by coming to church, by getting in this community, by being part of this teaching, the chances of me getting divorced are minuscule.
And the feminists have typically been pretty hostile toward some of the teachings of the church because they believe that it teaches women should submit to their husbands, and they poo-poo some of the rules of how we govern ourselves. But I was taught as a young bride that when I submit to my husband, that's just ducking so God can really whack him. So.
Okay, I'd never heard that line before. That is really funny.
Well,
I have to write that one down.
And as a woman legislator, I've been submerged in a culture of feminism. In fact, the women legislators always do fun things that the men are excluded from, and one of them was there are lawyers in the St. Louis area that only have a women's luncheon, and it's just the women lawyers. And they always invited me every year, and then we'd get to talk about our bills. And when I talked about divorce reform, I was so excited. I thought everybody would love it. And, boy, was I surprised for the cold, hard stares I got. People were – there was a lot of pushback. And that told me that from a public policy perspective, the attorneys are not finding any money to be made in divorce reform. It was really very difficult. So are you suggesting anything that we can do with your research on a practical level?
Yes, absolutely. Because here's really, truly the bottom line of all of this, is our culture has this culture-wide feeling of discouragement about marriage. I'm sure that's the reason why some of your fellow legislators, some of these divorce lawyers, and some of those people, they really, truly feel like, you know, marriage is broken and it's not a good institution anymore. And, you know, they may think of it as, well, it doesn't protect women. And the reality is that I have for years been studying men and women and listening to the internal cry of the heart of not just Christians, but everybody across the spectrum. And what I have found is that even the most hardcore, hard-shelled person who really is suspicious of marriage, they still want it. They still want to have that kind of lifelong companionship that they can trust and believe in for the rest of their lives, but they're avoiding it because they're scared. They've heard it doesn't work, and we need to get the message out that, you know what, despite everything we've tried to do to break marriage, this is an institution God created, and it still works, and we need to be able to give people hope because, honestly, big picture, this is one of the things that I have found that is really the common denominator in whether a marriage survives or fails, is whether the couple has a sense of hope or a sense of futility. Because if they think, you know what, we're going to make it, we're going through difficult times, but we're going to make it, the outcome is completely different.
Yes, yeah, so a lot of it certainly is your attitude. And it's clear that the feminists are really anti-men and very anti-marriage and anti the role of different roles for husbands and wives within marriage, because they have adopted this silly notion of the interchangeability of the sexes. What do you think about the fact that it is now mostly women who are initiating divorce?
I think it's because they've been sold the lie that that is the way that they are going to protect themselves and be happier. And truly, this is the problem is often, and this is one of the things I saw very, very clearly in the research. When we were researching men and researching women, one of the things we did for the other book that's kind of a cousin book to this one, I was looking at what makes the happiest marriages so happy. And we were comparing the answers on the survey of the husbands and wives to each other. And quite often, unfortunately, a husband would say, yeah, we have a happy marriage. And the wife would say, not as much. And there is something deep in the heart of a woman that needs to know he still loves me. He would choose me all over again. And that's what's important for her, to feel loved. And so when that doesn't happen, because he doesn't realize that she doesn't feel, you know, that she's feeling doubt. He has no idea. He's working 80 hours a week to provide. He thinks she's happy. And then suddenly he gets papers in the mail. Somebody serves him a summons, and he's clueless. Wait, what happened?
Well, you think then that their attitude toward marriage and whether they think it's going to succeed has a great influence on whether it does or not. Do you find, about the young people, Cynthia, what do you hear among your generation on this subject?
Everybody loves a fairy tale. We like the knight in shining armor. We like the idea of a happy ending at the end. And I believe in the bottom of everybody's heart, we want to have happiness. We just are confused about what will make us happy. There are many people who want to be loved, protected, honored, cherished. And there's not one couple on their wedding day who could imagine that they would be ending in divorce. The hope right on the wedding day is that we're going to grow old together. I mean, things continue to deteriorate physically as you get older. So why would anybody not want to have the stability and the security that comes from a happy marriage?
Well, even though there seems to be a decline in marriage, it doesn't seem that there's any decline in the sales of bridal dresses and everything that goes along with a fancy wedding. How about that? Like all the fancy weddings.
And not to make everything driven by money, but I will tell you, I just had a daughter married off in March, and it is all about money. The David's Bridal does marketing in a high level, and they get a lot of money out of it. So what are they really selling?
Well, I think that's better than paying money to get a divorce. Anything's going to cost, but a happy marriage is worth working for. And we're fortunate to have with us as a co-host today, Cynthia Davis, who's worked a lot in these issues. She's been a Missouri state legislator, and she's a good activist here in St. Louis on all good policy.
Of course, that's the voice of Phyllis Schlafly. Her credentials include more than 20 books penned. First stop on Eagle Forum Live is Trenton, New Jersey. Here's Andy.
Hello, Andy. Welcome.
Hi. I wonder if social media, Facebook, and other websites on the Internet, perhaps pornography too, if they are contributing to the divorce rate today. I've seen studies that participation in some of these social media websites has been connected to divorces. I understand it comes up a lot now in divorce proceedings. And I'm wondering if that's a risk factor that a couple has for a potential divorce down the road if they're spending a lot of time in social media on the Internet.
The divorce attorneys love it because it's a great way to gather evidence about an infidelity, or people have ways through modern computers to track what's going on and where people are going. And that's unfortunately the real problem. They don't want to reconcile. The most divorce purpose that you'll see is people really just don't want to put things back together. And Shanti, I'm sure that that was part of your book, that people can overcome adultery, they can overcome incarceration, people can overcome drug abuse, all the things that even would precipitate a normal divorce. Wouldn't you say that the bottom line is a refusal to reconcile?
Absolutely. No, it's very statistically clear. Today, you know, Facebook and all those others, to some degree, I'm sure it adds a little complexity, but really flirting with somebody on Facebook is just a symptom, right, of a bigger issue. And you know, 20 years ago, it would have been flirting at the person next to you at the PTA meeting. So it does probably add to it, but it's not really the reason. You're totally right, Cynthia. It's a heart issue. And that's where I return to this issue of, you know, we've got to reestablish this idea that staying married for life and commitment and this promise you've made is the norm. And returning to this idea that, wow, unlike what we've all heard and believed, it actually is still the norm. And if you break that norm, you're in the minority, very much so.
And I'll add to that too, Shanti, that people do use Facebook to send out propositions, and there are more opportunities to have an affair if you want to. I get people all the time who write to me and say, you look so beautiful, hey, how about we get to know each other? And I'm like, I'm not at all tempted by that. That's one of the, I'm like, what kind of fool do you think I am? But if I weren't in a happy marriage, maybe that would be a temptation. The root is still the same. You either decide you want to commit to marriage or forget it.
Next right. up and is Fresno, California, to talk to Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. Welcome.
Oh, good morning, Phyllis. I love your show. I try and listen every week, and I just I don't know what I would do without Bot Radio Network. It's just fantastic. My comment is that people, well, it is all about the money, but people are involved in a fantasy that they're in love with the idea of marriage and with the wedding. But when it gets tough, then they get going. So it's just something that communication is so important and commitment is so important. And when you stand, I was married almost 27 years and my husband passed away. But when you're standing at that altar, you mean what you say, but you don't really know what it's all about.
That's right.
Marriage is
a public contract made before witnesses, and
yes.
In the business world, we expect people to live up to their contract.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other show or three. Anyway, just my comment is people are in love with the fantasy, and when it gets tough, they want to be right many times, and you know, it's just... I love the idea of marriage, and I'm just so glad that God created it.
Yes, a happy marriage is one of the greatest things you can have. I certainly
have.
Yeah,
that
one.
Sharing with somebody and being, I think people don't realize they're on the same team either. They get at each other and it, you know, it goes south quick.
Mm. Thank you so much. We appreciate the call, Joanne. 800-736-3202. If you'd like to call in, like Sheila, listening in Omaha, Nebraska, to BRN.
Hello, Sheila. Welcome.
Hi, Phyllis. Hey, I appreciate the truth that you promote. And I just think, have the churches been so affected by the culture that, because in the early church fathers, there was no divorce. And when the scripture says, except, if a man puts away his wife and marries another, he commits adultery. And our church says, except for the cause of unfaithfulness. But if you look at the Greek, it says, except for the cause of fornication. And I just think, should we get back to what the scripture says, the foundations? That's the only thing that matters. I don't think there should be divorce in a church.
Well, that's a good point, Sheila. But Cynthia, I'd like to ask you, I am very disappointed with the pastors in this country who are not speaking out against these court decisions that are throwing out the vote of the people who have repeatedly in 33 states majority voted for traditional marriage of one man and one woman. And the gay lobby is pushing right ahead. And where are all these voices of the pastors who ought to be shaping up? I remember a video I saw of the Revolutionary War where the pastor was giving his sermon, and when he finished, he put down his robes, he put on his uniform, and picked up his rifle and marched out, and all the congregation marched out with him.
And I'd like to ask you, when is the last time you heard a sermon about what's wrong with homosexuality, what's wrong with fornication, what's wrong with any of these behavior choices?
Or even what's right about marriage and what marriage ought to be and how it is fulfilling.
And not all the pastors are wimpy, but I will guarantee you that we've had fewer sermons and messages. There's not the church discipline we used to have, and we're only reaping what we've sown. I have not seen any churches except the Catholic Church stay strong on this premise of you don't marry again to somebody else if you haven't corrected things. What's going on is people do tend to go into another marriage and then they create the same problems because they never fixed it. Well, when we took
it.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
We've taken a stand. When we take a stand that, look, you get your shot at it. If you blow it, then you just stay single the rest of your life.
Yeah. Can I respond to Sheila's question?
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind?
Go ahead, quickly.
Because honestly, I think what she said is basically, where are the churches in all of this and in divorce? And that's the misperception we need to correct, because one of the things we need to know is they are speaking out about this. And the rate of divorce is not the same in the church. And it truly is an urban legend that has given the church a black eye. And it's not true.
Well, my answer to that is a lot of the pastors are intimidated by the feminists. And I think pastors ought to set up a little committee of traditionally minded women to kind of be his interference when he's accosted by some one feminist in his congregation who wants to read the riot act to him, because that scares men.
And that point that was brought up about staying single if your marriage fails, that was not some obscure part of Scripture. That was in the Sermon on the Mount, and that was Jesus saying it in the red letters. And we need to all be serious. What we find refreshing is a church that actually does teach what the Bible says.
Eagle Forum Live goes to Washington, D.C. Phyllis, say hello to Andy.
Hello, Andy.
Hi, you mentioned that there was a chapter about marriage being hard. I was just wondering your opinion on, is marriage hard, and how is that changing?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's one of the big issues that scares people about marriage as well, is we've tried so hard to avoid the pendulum swing where people would get divorced quickly just because something was hard, that when people go into marriage, we say, oh, you know, marriage is hard, and it gives this impression that it's just oh, it's complicated. It's not enjoyable. You're going to have to endure for the next 40 years. And, yeah, some people do. Some people do have a very hard slog of marriage. But the reality is that most of the time, it's really not rocket science. It is hard work. You have to commit. You have to be willing to say, this is for the rest of my life, no matter whether it's hard or not. But in most cases, that hard work pays off. And we have to be able to really kind of lift marriage up again and say, you know what, yeah, it's hard work, but most marriages are happy. Most people enjoy marriage. This institution God created, it's a wonderful thing.
We're talking today with Shanti Feldhahn, and one of her books is called The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. Give us one or two clues of what makes a happy marriage.
Well, one of the things is something you guys were talking about just a few minutes ago, which is, you know, it's interesting. When you're hurt, it is really easy for you to kind of believe the worst of the other person's intentions. You know, you were talking earlier, Cynthia, about that's what happens when you get the divorce lawyers involved and all of that. And the reality is that these happy couples, one of the things that they do differently is when they're hurt, they refuse to believe the worst of their spouse's intentions. They say to themselves, instead of what we all tend to do in our human nature, we tend to say, oh, that hurt, and you know, he knew how that would make me feel, and he said it anyway, and you're believing the worst. And instead, the happy couples go, no, wait a minute. I know he loves me. I know he cares about me, so he must not have known how that would make me feel, or he wouldn't have said it. And believing in your spouse's goodwill truly can change everything for the long run.
And once again, here is Phyllis and, of course, her special co-host today, Cynthia Davis.
And today we're talking about the good news about marriage. We hear so much dismal talk. We're glad to talk with a guest, Shanti Feldhahn, who has written a book called The Good News About Marriage.
Cheryl from Nashville said she's never been married. She wants to get married, but the men around her just seem to want to have flings.
Well, I'm afraid a lot of the college courses are telling women, just have hookups while you're in college, and then you save. You don't get married till you're well-established in your career. I'm afraid that is a new feminist line now. What do you think about that, Cynthia?
We have ruined it for women. We used to have it so good. We held the bar high, and the men catered to that. So I think some of our sisters out there who are demanding free contraception and birth control from Obamacare have really lowered the bar for all of us. So what do you expect? The men are figuring everybody's on contraception, so we're all free game. I think that there's some societal problems. I'd say don't go to the bars. Go to a church if you want to meet good men. Pick which hole you're going to fish in. And what do you say, Shanti?
You know, you're totally right about where you can meet men that will have the same values. But, you know, one of the things that Cheryl mentioned is she said she's in her 40s, and, you know, she just feels like there aren't – that all the men really just want to fling. And here's my encouragement for her is to realize two things. First of all, doubt about marriage and whether a happy lifelong marriage is possible can come across as someone who just wants to have a fling. But underneath the surface, they want that commitment and that lifelong companionship just as much as you do. Now, not every man, obviously, but there are those men who you're sort of seeing that as wanting a fling, but it's not it. And so here's my advice, is to show them that truly with you, if you are a compatible person, if you're trying to be the right person that would be a good lifelong partner, you're giving them a vision that they could have a lifelong marriage with you, but you're going to do it right. You're going to do it in the right order. You're not going to have the fling with them. You're going to wait until marriage and show them that kind of happiness that they want can be theirs. For example, show them that you admire and appreciate them. That's the biggest need that men have is not feeling loved, but feeling that really this woman, she will appreciate me for the rest of my life. I cannot wait to start the rest of my life. Give them a vision for that.
Well, I think it's important that women realize they're holding the cards, and they ought, if a man is not worth thinking about for a future husband, he's not worth having an affair with and having a baby with. And we need to tell women the power that they have and the what they need to be thinking about and how they need to remember what it's going to be after they're 40.
Let's welcome Scott into the conversation here on Eagle Forum Live from Springfield, Missouri.
Hello, Scott. Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. My wife has filed for divorce and, of course, has hit a wall and is not willing to work on the relationship. And I just wanted to know what your thoughts are as far as possible reconciliation or rebuilding of our marriage.
Oh, Scott, I'm so sorry to hear that. That is such a tough spot to be in. And usually one of the things that we've found in all the surveys of women is that they kind of feel like they try and they try. And I don't know if this is the pattern in your marriage, but sometimes women feel like they try to get across the message. And then when it doesn't get across, they're not feeling loved or cared for, even though you're probably trying and you don't realize that she's not feeling cared for. They get to a point where they kind of close off their heart and they wall off their heart and they feel like there's no hope. And if you're in that process, the key is to show her that you see this and that you get it and that you want to love her well for the rest of your life and you are sorry. And then you have to try to get around the divorce lawyers like we talked about. You know, write her the letters and have it handed to her. Ignore your lawyer's advice to say, don't contact her because they could use it in court. Say whatever you want to say in the letter about how much you love her and appreciate her and want her back and how much you want to reconcile. And, you know, it's one of those things that, yeah, it may go against the lawyer's advice, but this is your marriage. She needs to see that you're fighting for her.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate the call. Let's see what Chelsea has on mind from Wichita, Kansas.
Hi, Chelsea. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I was just thinking back to something you stated earlier about how marriage can endure drug abuse and imprisonment and things like that. And right now, I am currently on my way to visit my husband in inpatient treatment. We have had a lot of people kind of try to hint around or sometimes outright just say that I should leave him. And I think it's ridiculous. It makes me really angry because we made our vows and we chose each other and our commitment is serious. He made a mistake and I believe that outside influence can have a lot to do with whether or not someone stays in their marriage. It's really important to keep it between you and your husband and perhaps a counselor and not allow others to influence you on your decision. And
you have any comment on that, Cynthia?
Well, when I was in the legislature, I actually filed a bill that said we can get your filing fee back if you decide to reconcile. And you wouldn't believe how angry all the court clerks were. And everybody's like, no, we can't give them their money back if they reconcile. But that creates an emotional barrier. Deep down in your heart, you know what's right. And you know that there's love there still.
And you know what you promised.
And you know that, you know, this complaint about things are hard, come on, give me a break. It's hard to drive through rush hour traffic. Some people think it's hard to make a white sauce. I mean, what's hard?
I love what Chelsea said. You know what, Chelsea, I want when you get through this and your husband get back together and have an intact marriage and 10 years from now, I hope you are mentoring other couples because you have the right attitude about this completely.
Clovis, California brings us Stacy to Eagle Forum Live.
Hi, Stacy. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you today?
Okay.
You know, I'm going, Chelsea, the previous caller, I'm going to piggyback off her, and that's exactly what I call for is I'm a divorcee of 5 years, and I was married for 19 years. And, you know, divorce is so hard, as those that have had to experience it. But, you know, I found through my experiences, you know, we go to our family, our friends for support when we're having problems. We ask for advice. And that's, you know, that's what they're there for, and that's what we rely upon. And I just want to encourage everybody out there that's suffering through, you know, circumstances where they are in question of what they should be doing. And to make sure that you're getting sound advice from people that are encouraging the continuance of the marriage. Because in my own experience, I found that my ex-husband's family tend to alienate him from me and tend to encourage and continue his ill feelings instead of trying to encourage us to be as one. So, I just advise listeners out there, make sure that you're going to the proper people, your church, somebody that's, got an experience with divorce and listen to their hardships and how they would do it differently. And make sure that you're getting advice that encourages the continuance.
Sheldy, I'd like to ask you a question. Well, there's been a lot of research that has shown that women regret getting an abortion later. How many women regret getting divorced? How frequent is it that people think at the time that's the right path, and then they come back to realize they've made a huge mistake?
In some of the numbers I've seen, the numbers are overwhelming, that people often go into a divorce thinking it'll make their life better and happier, and instead it's just another kind of pain. And it adds to it, because then if you have children, then you've got this whole thing of now it's not just you, but you realize that there's pain now in the children's life. And one of the things that's been very commonly studied is it better, for example, for the children to stay in a relationship with a husband and a wife staying together, even if there's conflict, or is it better for the children to be out of that kind of conflict? And all the studies are very clear. As long as there is not physical abuse, and physical abuse changes the equation completely, but as long as there is not that physical abuse or that type of physical conflict, it is always better for the kids to stay in the marriage and for the marriage to stay intact,
Well, I want to thank you, Shanti Felton, for a wonderful program today. You've given us some happy news, the good news about marriage and about staying marriage and about lifetime marriages. And I want to thank Cynthia Davis for joining me as co-host. We wish everybody will have a happy marriage. I certainly had one, and I appreciate all the good calls.